Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. As early as tomorrow, one of the most notorious figures in the clergy sex abuse scandal could be released from prison. Paul Shanley has spent the last 12 years in prison for raping a Sunday school student in the early 1980s. He was also accused of sexually abusing roughly two dozen other people over several decades. Now, we'll hear from an attorney for some of Shanley's alleged victims in a few moments. They do not want to see him released. But first, a defense attorney who specializes in defending accused sex offenders, Eric Tenen. Eric Tenen, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Mr. Tenen, I just want to get, first of all, right to the heart of why so many people, especially abuse survivors, are concerned about Shanley's release. I mean, just to remind folks, he did abuse about two dozen children over the course of decades and went to prison for raping a Sunday school student. And there are ongoing concerns, and I'd like to play a little bit of tape here. This is Rodney Ford. His son Greg was allegedly molested by Shanley in the 1990s. And here's why he doesn't want to see Shanley released, and just a warning to listeners, there is some sexually explicit language in this tape.
He brutally raped, sodomized children. You can't tell me Paul Shanley doesn't fit the criteria of a sexually dangerous person. I can't agree with that.
Mr. Tenen, that gets right to the heart of people's concerns. I mean, what is there to prevent Paul Shanley from reoffending if he is released?
So when we're talking about sexually dangerous person, we're actually talking about a legal creation by the legislature that has a very specific definition. And I understand the emotion and sort of validate the emotion that comes from being a victim of abuse and what that must mean to the person. But when we're talking about publicly whether someone's a sexually dangerous person, it's a different, we're looking at something different. We're looking at whether someone is likely to commit another act upon release. And there's lots of things that go into that calculus.
Well, so give me some of the parts of that calculus.
Sure. So there's actually a lot of research that talks about what sort of characteristics are correlated with reoffending. And Shanley really doesn't hit any of them. He's very old, and age is a robustly studied factor, and we know the older you are, the much less likely you are to reoffend across the board for any kind of crime, and especially sexual crimes. And that decrease starts happening in the 50s and 60s, and Shanley's now 86 years old. He's going to be supervised by probation. He's going to be registered. He has medical problems. So there's a whole host of things that what we calls or mitigate his risk to reoffend. Mm.
But he's not going to be wearing any kind of ankle or bracelet or tracking bracelet, right?
I don't believe he is, no.
Oh, okay. Because, I mean, I think I get your point. There's sort of a legal and medical criteria here, but people are seeking guarantees, right? I mean, like, how can we be sure, how can we guarantee that Shanley falls into that percentage of folks who aren't going to reoffend?
There's no guarantees ever on any side of this. We are talking about predictions of the future, which we can only do so good in terms of predicting. So what we do is we look at what we know and we try and apply that. And based on the characteristics that play here, it doesn't fit.
Do you think that the terms that you described earlier about, you know, serving probation, having to meet with a probation officer, et cetera, that is adequate to monitor someone like Paul Shanley to be sure that, you know, even when he's out, that he doesn't go down the path of reoffending?
It's more than adequate to monitor just about every person released with these kinds of charges, regardless of any other characteristic. It's a very small percentage of sex offenders that reoffend, despite public perception about that. And this, is based on research that tracks them for years, and this has been replicated in study after study. So we know most persons don't reoffend regardless. When you add to that some of these other mitigating factors specifically to Shanley, it gives even more confidence that it won't be an issue for him.
Mm. Now, forgive me for keeping on coming back to this,
sure.
but I'm thinking of how survivors, you know, may be responding to what you're saying, and I imagine a lot of them would say, "But I cannot risk my child or children that I know to what a study might say."
Sure. I mean, the problem is that these discussions are so often surrounded by emotion and very real, sincere emotion, but emotion doesn't always lead to sort of rational policy. You know, it's very difficult to explain someone who's emotionally involved in this case or in any case of this kind why I'm saying the things I'm saying. That's very difficult to do, but we as sort of a public have to understand that we approach these policies with more rationality, not driven by this emotion that, again, is very real, but is not a good way to base these policies.
I mean, do you think the system worked in this case, or is there a way, are there things that we can do, things that we can change to better satisfy all parties in cases like this?
So it's hard for me to sort of speak about what we can do to satisfy the victims in any of these cases and the emotional trauma that they suffer from it. That's, again, a very real thing, and I don't think there's anything that can be done on the criminal side or even on the civil commitment side that will ever satisfy that. We have to recognize that we're talking about different things. So when it comes to Shanley or anyone like that, anyone who's being released from incarceration from a sexual offense, the question we're asking is, as a legal matter, is this person what we consider sexually dangerous? And if they don't meet that criteria, then they're released, and in theory, they're not meeting that criteria because they don't pose a danger to the public. That is different than making victims of any of these crimes feel somehow better about someone's release. I don't think you're ever going to reconcile that.
Let me just ask you this question sort of in a different way, perhaps a simpler way. What is justice in a case like this?
There is no simple answer to that. There are some, like myself, who believe that if you have a criminal case and you have a criminal conviction, sentencing is the time to deal with all these issues, to deal with how much should someone be punished, how much should we incarcerate someone to incapacitate them, how much should we incarcerate someone to rehabilitate them. All those things should be taken into account, and in theory, you're going to get to a sentence that deals with all that. Justice doesn't always look the same to everybody, and certainly when you have opposing views, people are going to think that justice wasn't served for them. That happens in all kinds of criminal cases, not just sexual offenses. And in this case, in theory, that was all taken care of at sentencing. That was all considered at sentencing. At this stage, it's a different question. It's not about justice. It's about whether there's a public safety risk in releasing someone, you know, who's just finished serving a sentence on a sexual offense, and he does not meet the criteria, nor do most of the people released from these kinds of sentences.
Well, Eric Tenen is a criminal defense attorney. Mr. Tenen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate you talking about these issues.
Let's turn now to Mitchell Garabedian. He represented several of Paul Shanley's alleged victims, as well as dozens of other victims of clergy sexual abuse. Mitchell Garabedian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, give us your response to what you heard Eric Tenen says. I mean, he says that two doctors, as we know, don't believe that Paul Shanley is going to pose a threat, and so there's no real evidence to civilly detain him.
Oh, the evidence is clear and convincing. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. I have represented many victims of Paul Shanley, along with other attorneys who've represented victims of Paul Shanley, and these victims were abused repeatedly over the course of decades upon decades. We're talking about dozens upon dozens of victims who were sexually abused by Paul Shanley. One of the criteria used by the doctors was that he hasn't sexually abused in years. Well, he's been in jail for 12 years. How could he sexually abuse a child while he's in jail? The doctors, I don't believe, took into consideration, for instance, that Paul Shanley was in the Institute of Living in Hartford in the 1990s for treatment. And now that's a well-known treatment center for pedophilia. There are many factors here that have to be taken into consideration that I don't believe were taken into consideration. I mean, we're talking about prevention here, prevention of child abuse, not cure. And I think it's very important that that be noted.
Well, so then, I mean, are you, Mitchell, if I may ask, are you really arguing that after the 12 years of Shanley's incarceration and nobody's doubting the guilt for the crimes that he was sentenced to, but that he is exactly the same today as when he committed those crimes? I mean, he's 86 years old now.
Yeah, you're right. He may be worse because he never admitted that he needed treatment while in prison. He never admitted being a sexual offender. He hasn't even dealt with the issue. Where is he going to be when he's released? No one seems to know. He has to report to a police station to give us his address, so his address will be public. But no one knows where he's going to be. How are children supposed to be protected? There's no proper supervision of Father Paul Shanley. He's not going to be wearing an ankle bracelet. He's not going to be wearing an electronic device, and he's up to his own with regard to meeting children and enticing children. He's very cunning. He's very clever. He's extremely manipulative. He knows exactly what he's doing.
But he will be under 10 years of supervised probation, I mean, there will be more points of contact than just that one, like reporting of his address. I mean, what more would you like to see in order to guarantee the prevention that you were talking about earlier?
Well, he has to be. First of all, he has to have an electronic device in terms of where his location is. Just because he's supervised doesn't mean he's going to be supervised on a daily basis or a weekly basis or even a monthly basis. He could call in. He could visit his probation officer and lie. He could say everything's fine and when it isn't fine. Mm-hmm. He could have abused dozens of children and reported to probation and said, well, okay, I'm just going on with my life here. Everything's fine. And I also heard the fact of age. The fact that he's 86 years old doesn't persuade me in the least that he won't reoffend. Father John J. Gagin was in a retirement home in Regina Clary over here in Boston, a Catholic retirement home, when he sexually abused one of my clients. I represented thousands of clergy sexual abuse victims, thousands. And age is not a factor when it comes to them sexually abusing children, because it's so much about control as opposed to just sex. Mm. They have to be in control mentally. That's what it's about. So the factor of age does not come into play with regard to the ability to abuse or not abuse.
Michel Garabedian, okay. One more question here for you, because I'm listening carefully to what you're saying, and it sounds like, if I dig deeper here, that I mean, is the only satisfactory solution in your mind that people like Paul Shanley get locked away forever? Because that wasn't the sentence that he received when he was found guilty of those terrible crimes. And I mean, and how can that be an appropriate sentence?
Well, maybe. Well, he should be then treated for his pedophilia. He should be treated for his pedophilia. He should be civilly committed. Because that's the sentence that he should be serving, to keep children safe. The damage to a child is too great. The damage to a child's family is too great. The damage to a child's friends are too great when a pedophile strikes and then you try to cure the problem. He has to be treated as a pedophile. We're not dealing with a person who just, by the way, happened to abuse someone, which is terrible in and of itself, and I'm not trying to give any excuses, but this is a man who has a history of sexually abusing dozens of children over decades and decades. And now he's not even going to be supervised properly.
Michel Garabedian, I'm so sorry that I have to cut you off there, but I'm just flat out of time. But Michel Garabedian represented several of Paul Shanley's alleged victims and also multiple victims of clergy sex abuse. Michel Garabedian, it's always really great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.